The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
What's up, guys? Brandon One here. It is the Midwest Swing Podcast. Midwest Swing is catching up with the catcher. This is Chris Jimenez. How's it going, man?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing good. 6-4 road trip.
Yeah.
Go through L.A., Seattle, and then go through, who am I missing here? We just came home
from San Francisco.
San Fran, yeah. We don't go out there very much. So, obviously one of the coolest parks to play in. But what was the vibe? Obviously, you guys are taking care of business on the road, another really strong road trip. Goes into that? I mean, you guys just going on, it's kind of who you're playing, or what's it all about?
We've actually been kind of joking around about that. We don't really know why we've been winning on the road and not maybe necessarily at home as much as we have on the road. It's just kind of been one of those funny things. That's the way it's worked out, and we just kind of chalk it up to that. We just kind of laugh about it, actually. Like, we're like the best road team in baseball, but we're the worst home team in baseball. Normally, it's supposed to be the other way.
What's it like to see Seattle? Was like 7 games in 10 days or something. Yeah. Like, so I think today is actually Mejia Gallardo all over again. Right?
Exactly.
What's
that was
like?
The either second to last day or last day.
Yeah.
Played there.
Yeah. So I mean, is it weird to have that kind of a matchup where in such close proximity, you know, you're seeing a pitcher again and you're seeing, matchups that you might have to kind of combat as a catcher, especially. If you're calling a game for Mejia, you might have to change it up a little bit. What's that like?
You know what? Actually, it's a little bit easier, to be honest with you. Usually, within 3 or 4 days, not much has changed from a defensive catching standpoint, necessarily game calling. We might have to make a few more in-game adjustments just based off of the adjustments they're trying to make off of him. But really, it's kind of the same game plan. He threw a really, really good game against them last Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I think they're just going to attack essentially the same exact way they did on Saturday. And then just try to make them make the adjustment against us.
So we all know it's draft season. You went twice, the 34th round in 2004.
34th and then
the
19th.
The 19th round in 2004, the same year I went undrafted. So anyway, Rockies and then Cleveland.
Cleveland.
What was your draft experience like? What was your draft story? Because when I used to interview guys, I would talk to them, like Ben Revere as a rookie.
Right.
Hey, man, what was it like to be drafted by the Twins and tell, I don't know if it was Vanderbilt or not coming,
right,
whatever.
Right.
What was that like the first and then the second time? Like, did you ever get close to signing, first of all, with the Rockies?
Believe it or not, I didn't really play my senior year at baseball.
Really?
I got hurt in basketball. I was a basketball player, 6-foot white center. That's why I'm currently not playing basketball. But yeah, I was the only all-league center in our league, though.
Crazy.
Three guys go D1.
You like Mark Manson, like effort.
Essentially,
guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm like the white Dennis Rodman is what I was.
Whoa.
Essentially, I mean, basketball-wise, not like off the field stuff.
Who does your hair? I'm just kidding, man.
That's probably the reason I'm bald.
There
now.
You go.
But I was hurt, so I didn't really get to play my senior year.
Yeah.
A lot of it was based off of the travel ball teams I was on. I was lucky enough to make the All-State team, and I had a bunch of scouting kind of done from those two tournaments, I guess you could say. But I ended up still getting drafted in the 34th round. It was pretty cool. My dad and my uncle were sitting at home and actually drinking a beer. I don't know if I can probably say that on the
app.
We're all red-blooded Americans, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay. But I was at school, ended up, I had a free 6 period as my senior year in high school. I'm on my way home, and I'm coming out of our high school parking lot. I've got my 3 high school teammates coming in, and they see my truck leaving, and they're like screaming, jumping up and down at me. They had found out that I had no idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like MLB Network.
Right. We didn't have any of that back then.
Well,
I didn't even have a cell phone.
The 34th isn't on TV either.
Exactly. Right, right. I didn't even have a cell phone then. So.
What was that, 1997?
It was pretty close, yes. Not too far off.
Peanut Gallery.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Some nice best friend you are. Number 7 on the list. So I'm actually going out of the parking lot. They're coming in, and they went to the local sports store and bought all kinds of Rockies gear and were like showing it to me. And I'm like, what in the world's going on here? So I pull off to the side of the road. They jump out like, you're just going to drive by the Rockies. kind of was, I thought they were joking, and I drove home, and my dad and my uncle were high-fiving me, giving me a bunch of, you know, hugs and stuff, saying I'd just been drafted. I actually played for the Rocky scout team, and the same scout that I played for in my junior year of high school is the one who ended up drafting me. And they had known that I already committed to go to the University of Nevada, and I was, personally, I was giving it a lot of consideration, even though my dad would have never let me. My mom and dad were big on me making a commitment to go to school, and looking back on it, I think, you know, honestly, it was the best decision at the time.
So is getting drafted a second time somehow less thrilling or still pretty awesome?
No, it was. I think it was even more awesome, because this time I knew that I was going to go to school. I had a good idea I was going to be drafted. I thought I was going a little bit earlier than I did, but hey, it all worked out the way it was supposed to. But I ended up going the second day. I was in the first round of the second day. I was like the sixth pick, I think, of the second day. And found out I'd been drafted by Cleveland, who had also taken three or four other guys from the University of Nevada years prior. So I had some good scouting on the organization. And you know, really, it's, I kind of grew up there. It was, they kind of helped me become a man. And going to college, I think, really, really helped me just experience-wise, but you know, you grow up, you learn how to be away from mom and dad, you get to pro ball and you're with some kids, some 16, 17 year old kids that have never been away from their mom and dad. They don't even know how to do their laundry.
Got to be a good influence.
Yeah, so at least, well, I knew how to do my laundry, which is a big plus in the minor leagues. I mean, obviously, it's one of those experiences. I was my own agent. I didn't have an agent at the time, so I negotiated my own contract, which was, I'm not very good at, because he asked, the first thing they asked was, how much will it take for you to sign? I said, well, I'll sign right now.
Whatever,
and that's,
dude,
probably not the greatest thing to say.
I said that to him. I said that to Tom.
Yeah,
Tom,
yeah.
The camera here. I said that to him too.
I'm fine with no agents, man.
So as a big leaguer, though, do you guys pay attention to it at all? Even just one eye on it? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Again, with the number one pick, I suppose, probably kind of blows that up. You got a former number one pick that is right next to your locker here.
We actually just had a really cool conversation about, you know, his draft experience.
Yeah.
The scout that drafted him is now our field coordinator, minor league field coordinator.
Oh yeah.
And I kind of picked his brain on what'd you see in this guy? Like, he doesn't even look that cool.
He didn't have a sideburns yet.
Yeah, right. Why draft him?
Had his pole all the way down.
Mark Pryor, Teixeira.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys.
DeJuan Brazel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe we won't go there.
We won't go down.
We won't go there. But
so I got to ask you, Jay Jaffe wrote an article about you pitching four times this year already. Do you like attention on this, or is it just like, man, I'm just doing my job?
I mean, I really don't care. I think it's probably a lot more fun in my head than I play it out to be. But I got word of, I guess, the major league record for appearances in 1 year is 7, and now that's kind of a secret goal that I might have.
Yeah.
So if Molly ever tries to throw anybody else, I'm going to be upset. And Eddie's been working on me with a knuckleball. So I'm trying to add a new pitch to my repertoire.
What was it like?
I got 68 to 82, and then maybe a knuckleball.
You can throw an Ephus.
Yeah,
Ephus. Yeah.
What was it like throwing to Esky? Were you giving him tips on framing and everything?
I have to admit, that was...
he's like my favorite guy in the
team. Kind of the blind leading the blind, to be honest. Yeah. You know, it was actually quite comical, but I give him a lot of credit, man. He, you know, that's not the easiest position to do, whether it's me pitching or obviously a real pitcher pitching. I'm glad it was me throwing first, as opposed to him having to catch an actual real pitcher. Kind of break him in easily, I guess you could say. But, you know, it was kind of fun. He actually did a good job, man. I told Castro, I said, you might be out as my personal catcher. It might be out here.
Well, I tweeted while you were on the mound, I need to see some framing metrics for this guy.
Yeah, right? Because he actually held, like, he held a couple of balls.
He's
there.
Like, he's really getting into it, which is funny.
There was one I thought was 100% a strike. And, you know, I got balled up. And I wasn't too pleased when I caught the ball back. I'm like, hey.
Who in here would you most like to catch from a position player standpoint? Is it Esky? Because he threw
100%.
100%. There's no.
There really is nobody else I'd rather catch. I mean, if I was going to catch a position player, it would 100% be.
So you gave up a warning track fly ball. Was it Seager?
Seager, yeah.
And so you're doing this, and I couldn't tell if you were telling him to hit the weight room or maybe an obscene gesture or whatever.
No, it was definitely. I looked at him and I said, no pop, and I said, hit the weights.
Awesome. He heard you.
He heard me. Yeah. He was actually, I played with him there in 2011.
Yeah.
He was one of my best friends on the team there, so we always like to joke around with each other. He got a kick out of it, and I guess it kind of, my wife told me it's kind of gone a little viral.
Really?
Yes. Yeah,
it's been out so. There.
You're going to start doing like GIFs and yeah, like, they'll put in the auto tunes.
Weightlifting GIFs. I should have got on there and said like squat more.
Well, she's a fitness guru too, right?
Yeah, so she is.
She's like, oh man,
she's in the fitness
too.
World. Yeah, I'm repping her too. It'd be great.
We'll touch on that in another show. Your repertoire though, you threw, so the first time you pitched, you're throwing a little harder. Have you just changed it up? Or,
I learned from my mistakes, let's put it that way. The first time I threw in 2014, I actually tried to be a pitcher. I tried to hump it up a little bit, and I thought I needed Tommy John and shoulder surgery for the next.
What is the Jose Canseco thing? Didn't he get hurt when he pitched?
He did, yeah. He did. And I tried to, like, throw hard, and not as hard as I could, but I tried to, like, give it a little bit, and I hit 87 three times, I think.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I knew I had more in the tank, but I also, my fingers were tingling and numb, and I felt like, I better just tone it down. So, and the fact that my entire like back strap and my elbow and shoulder hurt for the next 4 days, I figured the next time I was going to do it, I was just going to throw as slow as possible so that way I could survive the next day.
So you've played in some analytically inclined organizations, and that's not always been a big thing here. Now, this is obviously your first season, but where do you put this front office as far as organizations with analytics that you've played for? If you were to rank them, are they pretty close?
Yes. I had both of the two leaders of this new organization, Texas and Cleveland.
As we said on the last show,
they traded me back and forth to each other twice. So I have a pretty good feel for both of those guys.
Yeah.
But I would definitely put them in the top five of their list. They do a very, very good job of integrating the old school thought process with a little bit more of the new school kind of StatCast era stuff. You know, they're very analytical about the way they go about things, whether it be spending money, you know, trying to get the most value for the money is spent. You know, how we position guys in the field. You know, they've done the work. They've started to bring in some of the personnel to kind of get that advanced scouting department a little bit more well-equipped, I think, than it was with the previous regime, which I was not here for.
You were very complimentary on the last time we chatted, not on the show, about Jeff Pickler's role in all that.
I could not be more appreciative of what he's done for us this year. You know, he's really come in. He came in from the Dodgers being a special advisor.
You want to copy that organization, man?
Yes.
Except for the money, I guess.
I actually, yeah, we don't have that. Not too many teams do.
No.
You know, I actually have had both of the people running the Dodgers were with me in Tampa, or I was with them in Tampa.
Yeah, Mr. Freeman.
So, yes, so I know their analytics very well as well. But the fact that they considered him in L.A. to be the baseball guy, and here he's considered the stat guy. So it's kind of funny how the two organizations differ so much. But, you know, he's really brought a ton of advanced reports to us. He's taken Lion and Jason's input on scouting reports, and we've kind of created our own to model and mold what we like to see the best. He's incorporated Jared Hefner right now as an advanced scout.
Former Met,
who is you know, in there, poor guy's in the hole all day, like never sees the light of day, and he's getting paler by the moment.
I was gonna make a joke, but you got the equity. I can't. You can make that joke. I can't make that joke. So you got all kinds of tools.
All kinds of tools. Yes, at our exploit.
Speaking of
and
analytics,
I think it's helped.
Speaking of analytics, this is the last one we got. We talked about pitch framing, and you said that you think it means a lot.
Yeah.
Do you guys, as catchers, you and Castro, prefer calling it pitch framing, receiving? Because you don't want to make it sound like you should be working at Dick Blick,
right?
framing pictures for people, but at the same time, it is what it is. What do you prefer, and then what do you think the actual value is of it?
Well, I'll tell you what, the value could be exponential. It could be something that's really not quantified, to be honest with you. If you've got somebody back there that is just not taking strikes away from you, strictly not taking strikes away from you, your pitching staff's going to be exponential. If you've got a guy back there that can not take strikes away from you and get you a couple extra, it might just happen to be that one extra one, if they get one a game, that one extra one, bases loaded, two outs, full count, and he throws a ball 6 inches outside, we ring him up, or, you know, to start that inning off. You know, if we get a full count or a 2-2 pitch that's borderline close, now you go 3-2, now you have to come to the heart of the plate, and the guy hits a 3-run homer or something like that. Like, that's a part where that's really kind of a big, big deal. And the one thing that's fun with our pitching staff is we don't have a lot of guys in our staff that have a lot of swing and miss stuff.
Right.
So, numbers-wise, it's going to kind of appear a little different. we have guys that when we do hit spots, we're going to need those extra few inches because we don't have that swing and miss curve.
Yeah, it's not the McCullers, the Keichels, the McHughs, the Fears of the world.
The Klubers, the Bowers,
Salazars.
You
could go all day with those guys.
Exactly. So we're not necessarily equipped right now with that kind of stuff. So we need to try to get those extra corner pitches as best as possible for the low pitches. You know, that way it really boosts our pitching staff up. And knowing that, hey, consistently we can throw this ball in this spot and we're going to get called a strike is going to help us out as opposed to having to throw the ball more in the middle part of the plate. And then, you know, like I said, we don't have swing and miss stuff. And that's when things start to get banged around, and that's probably when I end up pitching.
That's Chris Jimenez. I'm Brandon Warren. We've been catching up with the catcher.
Right.
Thanks, man.
You bet.
We'll get you on the next homestand on the Midwest Swing Podcast.